Yes, this question about mushrooms and drugs. And of course, for a lot of people, the question would be, well, how are they related? And in fact, they're intensely related, because in a way, mushrooms, as many healing systems indicate, are like our nervous system. And drugs, of course, as many societies know, trigger effects in our nervous system. So the common denominator on that is how this nervous system, and how we can look at that. Maybe it's easy starting point is to understand that mushrooms are not what you see. Paul Stamets is biologist who's very well known for the research of mushrooms, and he has many wonderful videos on his findings, such as the capacity of mushrooms to learn to digest oil. So he had mushrooms grow on soil, and he added more and more and more oil into it, and at some point the mushrooms were able to digest the oil, because that is the flexibility and adaptability which mushrooms have. In that sense, they are a form of intelligence. Their intelligence is the capacity to deal with an environment differently. Intelligence is that the knowledge that you have, you can use it elsewhere, or that what you have learned elsewhere, you can adapt so that you can apply it where you are. And mushrooms show that. And when you look at the mushrooms, you can actually in a way see it, because the mushrooms are most often a large say network antenna of very fine roots, and the mushroom cap is only a connection point of that very large root system. So for example, in forests you might find some mushrooms, but then the root system is say 10 meters around in all areas. And in that sense, you could also look at those the roots of the mushroom as a kind of radar dish antenna, in which the mushroom is, let's call it the microphone, or the way you find it in a radio telescope. At the level of the mushroom, you can then see that there is this translation between the vibration input on the roots of that network of the mushrooms, and the way these roots then process that information, bring it together, and the spores of the mushrooms are, in that sense, the vibrational response of that network to cosmic and natural environment vibrations incorporated. For me, that then associates with the work of Gaston Nasson. He is very well known as the dark field microscope researcher, originally from France, later in Canada. And he looked under the dark field microscope at the relationship between spores and fungus and virus and microbes, because he discovered that in the dark field microscope it is possible to see a relationship between them. Maybe it's interesting to explain the principle of dark field microscope, because it is a clever use of the interference of light within itself. So there arises a kind of hologram pattern of the light, because the way it bounces before it goes into the lens, as a result of which a kind of Kirlian photograph is made. Kirlian photograph makes use of a Tesla coil electromagnetic field, a pulsation of the electromagnetic field in the interaction of matter and the electromagnetic field that surrounds us, as a result of which you can see things which otherwise you could not see. It's a sort of different version of a moiré pattern, where you vibration within vibrations, as a result of which they can amplify forms which otherwise you would not be able to see. It's a kind of natural amplifier system. And the dark field microscope, that principle we've seen there was, by the way, also used by Royal Raymond Rife, who used coatings of lenses. He was an internal medical doctor who also learned to make lenses at the lights factories. So he was able to understand that if you put coating on lenses, you can actually have the light break within itself on itself and sort of catch up with itself. And as a result of which, he was able to look into the invisible region of the spectrum, and thereby was able to see virus when other people were not able to do so. So after he died, the FBI smashed up his microscope, not to give medical doctors the ideas that you can think for yourself. Maybe people should not listen to that too much. You're not supposed to say that. No, I did say it because it is necessary to hear it. There are all kind of knowledge and bits of information which are available because people look in ways in which others do not. And that's precisely what we see in the mushrooms. The mushrooms have a system of sensibility. They can gather vibrations and connect up to them and bring them together in the spores. And the connection between the network of the mushrooms and the spores of the mushrooms is very close to what Gaston Nasson was able to see under the dark field microscope. He saw that the spore, he called it the somatite because he was looking at a more general principle of the spore, and also a smaller and much more fundamental element of life, as he considered it. And he could see that out of these somatites, fungus forms could emerge, which basically is that the molecules are not balled up in a little spore or the somatite shape, but that they actually stretch up and elongate and form, let's say, a linear antenna, which is what a fungus would then be. And if you have this linear antenna go in multiple directions, that is the essence of a virus. That, say, you can compute different vibrations at the same time. And I go back to the understanding of molecular chemistry and molecular biology. You have rod molecules, you have ring molecules. The rod molecules can transform, the ring molecules can maintain. And then the interaction of those kind of molecules, this goes back again to the work of Phil Callahan, Antennae in Nature. That these forms of fundamental life are actually antennae, and they are in interaction with the electromagnetic field of the environment. Thus they are processing information. And then it makes sense that if you can do that in a spore form, you could also do that in multiple layered viral form. And evidently, as Gaston Nasson saw in the microscope, this can then sort of reflect back to the spore or the somatite from which it came and ball up again in a microbial form. And what he saw, there was a possibility for these different forms of life, or different shape of life form, to interchange from the one to the other depending on the environment that they are in. Coming back to this story about the work of Paul Stamets, mushrooms are able to adapt immensely and intensely to changes of environment. And what Gaston Nasson showed is that this actually takes place in the forms of life themselves, and how, at the most fundamental level, they are interconnected. In a different way, we could say that this is what would be the primordial form of intelligence. Let me just connect that up to the work of Bruce Lipton, which I refer to at other moments as well, because there you see the same principle in the sensor protein of the cell, the portal protein of the cell, the linking protein of the cell, and the DNA mantle protein in the cell. And there you can see that these proteins, I compare them to the fungus or the virus or to the network of the mushroom, these proteins do work as antennae, and they work on the processing of information. Now, what I'm trying to sort of stress by repetition is that at this level we are looking at the handling of information. The link between mushrooms and drugs is that we are dealing with a change of processing of information. We are changing intelligence. We're changing how we relate to the information we have in perspective with respect to the environment that we are in. So with that understanding, we can then sort of make the jump from the mushrooms to our nervous system, because with the story of Bruce Lipton and the role of the proteins, we already have the bridge towards that, because in that sense the sensory protein is, say, our sensory service organ of the body. The portal protein is from mouth to anus. The gut is the digestive system of the body. The linking protein, which combines sensation and action, is our thinking capacity in the body, say the brain. And the DNA mantle protein is the memory capacity of the body, say the body as a whole, because the information in the body is stored everywhere. So then we can understand that what the sensory protein does in the cell is what the brain does in the body, and what the whole nervous system does in the body. The brain is actually like the mushroom cap. It is where the information comes together, and you can understand that and see that from the way information is taken into the body. All kind of vibrations come onto the surface of the body, and then there are sensory cells which are very specifically equipped to be like a mousetrap. Something comes in and it snaps shut. Some vibration comes in, and the sensory cell has a charge discharge. So from this cell, which functions as a point of contact in the system, it has then relayed through the neuron, which is like a chain of dominoes falling over and then put upright again. Then it goes into the plexus, which is like a moiré array. It is like one grid on top of the other, like a whole tapestry of falling over dominoes, which, like in the retina in the eye, which is also a plexus, is like the moiré system, an amplifier system in itself, that the waves repeating, reflecting in itself, the same as what I described for the dark field microscope and the microscope of Royal Raymond Rife. The eye function in that way, that it compares patterns, and as a result implied patterns can be pulled out. And so from the sensory cell, the point, through the neuron, the line, through the plexus, the plane, the information goes down into the mushroom cap of the brain, three-dimensional. So we see the relation between the point, the line, the plane, and the volume, zero dimension, one dimension, two dimension, three dimensions. So we see that the information is processed, taken into the body in four dimensions. And we need to understand that, because at every level the information process is different. And mathematics has a capacity to describe that. So this charge discharge at the level of the cell would be called a Dirac pulse. Suddenly there's everything, and immediately after is nothing. In mathematics, the Dirac pulse has all of the vibrations which are available, but in a minute moment. This pulse is then passed on to this chain of falling over dominoes of the neural system, in this line of information transfer. But at that level, the signal is decoded in what's called a Fourier transform. This is done by the work of Valerie Hunt. She showed that the neural system is actually able to do a Fourier code breakdown, and the mathematics of the Fourier filtering system is famous in mathematics and physics because there are so many applications. So it's not surprising that we find it in our body in the way information is propagated in a different kind of encoding than in the cell, where the Dirac pulse took place, and now in a neuron it is a Fourier pulse. And I need to refer to these different pulses and different coding systems because we're still talking about the relationship between the mushrooms and the drugs. So we are talking about the different capacities of the brain to process information. So in our body we can see that the cell has the Dirac pulse, the neuron has the Fourier code, and the plexus, we go from 0 to 1 to the two-dimensional now, works like a Moiré array. And a Moiré array is used in engineering. For example, it was a standard measurement technique for determining how much a bridge was weighed down by ballast. So they drew a square grid, say a checkers grid, on the bridge, and then put a truck on top of it and took a photo of the bridge without the truck and a photo of the bridge with the truck. And then because of the way the checker grid lines were repositioned between the first and the second photo, it was possible to see in an amplified manner how much the bridge was weighing down due to the weight of the truck. So this Moiré array, I mentioned that before, is an amplifier system, and it is a different kind of encoding for the information as it goes into the body, and then when it goes finally into the three-dimensional organization of the brain, we see a three-dimensional form of wave encoding, and that has been described by Gabor, and that is the basis of the principle of the hologram. So at this level of information processing, we see the relationship between point, line, plane and volume, the Dirac pulse, the Fourier code, the Moiré array and the Gabor hologram. But all of them are working with the information. And what neurologists tend to forget is that our body is not a machine. It is not waiting for information. But our body is composed of living cells, which actually operate nuclear energies and which operate in phase space. So these cells are alive. They are not waiting for information because they are processing information. They do not need new input. All they need is the change of input. And that is also why it is so interesting to find that as the information goes into the body, it goes into a series of amplifiers. From the Dirac pulse to the Fourier code to the Moiré array into the Gabor hologram, as a result of which you get more and more information about the changes of information. So the brain is actually processing on a change of phase, which is very interesting because it means that it operates in phase space. Now we exist in four dimensions, so phase space is the fundamental one. Then there is the electromagnetic change of polarity, or the redefinition of polarization, which takes place in the plexus and in the retina. So that's where you then already have a different layer of the information, the change of phase of information, which now takes place at the level of energy. Then it goes at the level of the chemistry of the neuron, calculating backwards, and you see that the calcium ion gating polarizes and depolarizes the charge discharge, so you have this chemical and electrical interaction. And then go all the way back, you see that there is this contact with space, where within the cell there is a structural reorganization as a result of which, as a result of vibrations in the environment. And most typical is the example in the eye, where the rhodopsin, which is purple in the eye, it's a molecule which captures photons and actually can detect the photon spin angle as the photon goes into this conical shape of the rhodopsin and is in a way split out in the dominant direction that the photon came in on, which is, as Dan Winter showed, the direction of the photon spin which is undetected. So we have a very refined spatial detection system, which then translates into a chemical system, which can translate to electromagnetic system, which then goes back into the phase system in the brain. But in the brain, it operates in phase space, which means that it is beyond the limits which Einstein imposed on the speed of light, because it is beyond the speed of light. So that means that at the level of consciousness, our range and scope of what we can experience is much larger than that what is limited by the speed of light. And that is precisely what we need in order to be able to process consciousness. As cells, of course, in all that they do, and when we talk about mushrooms, when we talk about the brain, we are always talking about cells. In all that cells do, they have this internal dynamic which they use to calibrate what they do with respect to the other cells around them. So there's the internal cell cycle, which is cells tune and fine-tune, and there's the feedback loop between the cells, which is tune and fine-tune, and out of that originates the coherence of all the cells in our body. But the cells need to tune and fine-tune by knowing what happens within the cells, what happens in the cell with which they interact, what happens in the cells around them, with which they do not have a direct interaction, but of which they perceive the electromagnetic activity signatures. Like the heart has electroactivity, which we can measure, the cells can detect the electromagnetic activities of all the cells around them. But at the fourth level, they also are aware of the electromagnetic field outside of the body. So there's always four levels of electromagnetic information that are processed by the cells. And that is at the core of the intelligence that we live in. So in our body, we have this whole nervous system. But that nervous system is not just composed of the neurons, because the neurons actually look very much similar to the lymphatic system, which looks very much to the arterial system, which looks very much similar to the venous system. And so we have a fourfold level of tree-like, fractal-like antenna systems in the body, which serve to conduct different kinds of information. The neurons have a fluid transport, but they also have the electric transport. The lymphs, the arteries and the veins, they have this fluid transport, but actually, as Björn Nordenström showed, they are also conduit for electric currents. So in that sense, everything in the body must be interpreted as an antenna. And every antenna is tuned in a different way, so it captures and processes a different part of the information. So when we're looking at the processing of information in our body, this goes well beyond the brain and the nervous system, which most people look at. Those are actually merely the centers of information integration. So then you can see that in the way that the information of the surface of the body is funneled through the neurons, through the plexus, into the brain, which then brings it together and pumps it out into the rest of the body, we see exactly the same as when the blood from throughout the body is collected in the veins and brought to the heart, where it is charged with an electromagnetic pulse signature, and from there it is pumped back into the body. And the same we see that in the food, all of the food actually then goes to the blood, and that is the core of the elements of the circle of the gods, of the Olympus, of the organs, which together are also a system where first it comes together and then it is distributed throughout. And in that same way, we can see that every cell of the body actually brings things together and then distributes it throughout. So we see that pulsing, that breathing pattern of the taking in of information, processing the information internally and feeding it back into the body at four levels. The brain does it, the heart does it, the gut organs do it, every cell does it. And so I tend to describe that as a relation between the head, the heart, the hara, and the holy bone. The brain with integrating information, the heart with integrating the oxygen in the blood, the organs with integrating the food in the blood, and the cells integrating the existence in the body. So then suddenly the notion of the information processing in the body is suddenly system-wide. Everything in the body partakes of that. The body as a whole processes information. It takes in information, it stores information, it transforms information, it releases information. And where we started with the mushroom as a kind of parabolic antenna in nature, we can see that our whole body does exactly the same, and that the activity of the neural system, or the information processing system in our body, is then directly connected to the structure of the body as a whole. This is where the work of Maturana and Varela is interesting, because it helps to understand how drugs affect that neural system, because it shows that the signals in the neural system need to be regarded as separate from it in a way. And think of a copper wire, which is a conductor for electricity. Then you know that there are electrons which are part of the atoms of the copper, and you know that there are electrons which are part of the signal that is being passed through the telephone line or the radio cable or the sound cable or whatever it be. But how can you tell apart which of the electrons are part of the matrix, of the substrate, of the copper, of the cable, and which of the electrons are part of the signal that's passing through it? In that same way, Maturana and Varela were trying to look for the difference between a dream and a sensation. When you look at the world around you, you see the landscape around you, there are impulses in the nervous system which you can measure as chemical changes, electrical changes, and so on. When you have a dream, the chemical and electrical changes are exactly the same. So how can you tell a dream apart from a perception? Basically, you can only do that by seeing that in a perception it is connected to the world around us, and in a dream it comes back to the memory system from which the dream originates, and the one is, say, part of an open system, the other is part of the closed system, but the information in the cabling, so to say, is exactly the same. This is where I need to bring into the story the change of perspective and come back to what I've described elsewhere, the communication between the cells, because in order to understand how the neural activity in the cells can actually affect the activity of the body, we first need to understand that coupling, and we need to be able to understand the opposite. If the neural system can affect the body, then physicality can also determine the neural system, and that is actually what the drugs do. There is a physical molecule which influences the information communication through the system. The coupling of the two, the coupling between a neuronal and, let's call the drugs, the hormonal, because all of the drugs are related to a hormonal communication system where molecules are used to communicate information or to transfer signals, then the connection between the neuron and the hormonal can best seen actually at the moment of cell division. At the moment that the cell divides, this, first it is one blob, and then the blob becomes a kind of bar handle, a rod with two balls at the end, two spheres which are still connecting at the middle, and at the last point you can still see that there is a little tube which connects the one cell and the other. Pull it apart, that tube would extend, pull it a bit further, and you have two seemingly separate cells. But just go back to that moment where the cells membranes are still connected. This is an image to help understand it, the principle involved. At the moment that the cells are still connected, at the inside of this tube, you would have the Josephson tunneling, so to say, taking place through that, then that is where the inside of the cell communicates with the inside of the other cell, where materials can be exchanged, and that is where we can understand that the hormone system does exactly that. Pull the cells apart a little bit further, and the cells still connect, but the tunnel has sort of disappeared. You only have the membrane connecting to the membrane, with just a little bit of fluid on the inside, and that is what the neuronal system does. So the neuronal system and the hormonal system are actually part of that system of feed forward and feedback between the cells, except that you don't see it as such anymore later on. You see it as a neuronal system, you see it as a hormonal system, and as Cyril Smith says, the neuronal system is the telegraph wires or the telephone lines, and the hormonal system is the postal service and the parcel delivery. So with the neuronal system you have a very point-to-point connection according to that established line of the telephone wire, and with the postal system you can send it out to all of the houses in the neighborhood, and all of them will have the information. So in that way the nervous system has two ways of specifying how information is processed. The neuronal system had to be very precise and specific, and the hormonal system for a diffuse and general approach. Combine the two, and you have that same principle as that of the network of the roots of the mushroom and the say the microphone of the cap of the mushroom in the middle of it. So it is again the same story as the ring molecules and the rod molecules and that biology of life that the cells work with. So it is that system in which you then have the rod molecules and the ring molecules of the hormones, which can be tuned to vibrate different sing songs of the language of the body. Body language is the language of cell communication, and a healing method will only work if the cells can understand it, which means it must work at the level of the body language, which is the level of cell communication. So we now know that this level of cell communication is not just the feed forward and the feedback loops of the molecular exchange between the cells, which works at the physical, the chemical, the electromagnetic and the photonic level, but it is also this wider network of the neurons and the hormones. It is still this much wider network of the whole vesicular system, of the lymphs, of the arteries, of the veins and of the neurons. And as Bjorn Nordenstrom showed, the whole body is a motherboard in which electromagnetic signals are processed in very specific manners, because everything is either a conductor or a resistor, and thereby determines the flow of the information throughout the body. And that information flow throughout the body is what we call consciousness, and the application of that consciousness in specific environments, and the ability to change the information that's stored in memory to apply to different environments, that is called intelligence. So now we know that at the level of the neurons and the hormones, there is this interplay between the two, where on the one hand we could look at it as a perception, at the other hand we could look at it as a dream. But we can also see and say that it is actually the relationship between the psychic and the somatic, because these molecular exchanges between the cells, yes, they are physical, yes, they are chemical, yes, they are electromagnetical, but principally they are forms of information. So that's, say, pure information, spirit. So in that interaction, we see how the alchemy of the relationship between mind and body takes place. And we can see the engine of the psychosomatic interaction is actually based on the zipper of manifestation of the universe, which is, I've mentioned that before, the photon jump, which can trigger the electron jump, which can trigger the electron oscillation, which can trigger the electron bonding. So that the change of a quantum will work in the light field, the electromagnetic field, the chemical field, and the physical field. And that interaction is the foundation of psychosomatics. So information can move matter, but matter can also be the conduit, the circuit board for the information. And in our body, it is wonderful how the body temperature, which, by the way, as Michel Essaidi said, it ranges from, say, 7 degrees to 100 degrees. So the body temperature is not just the temperature of the body, but it is the molecular activity in the body, which has a very much wider range in temperatures, because these are actually electromagnetic interactions with materials in niches of cells, at the surface of cells and organs, in turbulent flows in the body, and so on. But on the whole, the body temperature is maintained and calibrated in such a way that most of the body materials are at the tipping point, so they can respond to changes in information by a change of structure. You know, the piezoelectric lighters, you squeeze the crystal lattice and electron comes out. That principle we find throughout the body. The body is piezoelectric, it is a liquid crystal, it is a transducer, transponder, and it is a photon capturing device. So it actually, at all levels, there is a direct interaction between the change of the information field and the change of the material structure. So we should not look at the body as an anatomical object, which it is not, because the body anatomy has been made by the living cells to optimize their communication. The materials which are resistor, materials are conductor, they are actually positioned in such a way that the electromagnetic information communication between the body cells is optimal. And it is that process which is calibrated at the tipping point, so that a change of information will make it possible to have a change of structure. And that is why we can think things and act on them. So when people say psychosomatic is nonsense, they forget that they think on something, they act on something. That is very much psychosomatic. The psychic and the somatic are very intimately linked. What I described for the body materials, piezoelectric, liquid crystal, transistor, and operating at the photon level, is a precise example of that. But it is just a more generalized example of what happens in this neuronal hormonal communication, where we see that psychosomatic interaction at a much more sensitive level of interaction. And in order to illustrate the immense sensitivity of the responsiveness at the neuronal and the hormonal level, which is why drugs can have such a strong effect, I first would like to illustrate what happens in the sexual interaction of orgasm. Orgasm mimics what we do in eating food. First we physically chew it, then we chemically use the acids in the stomach to digest it, then electromagnetically use enzymes in the duodenum to break the molecules apart, and then we literally take out the information in the transition through the gut membranes. So we go from physical to chemical to electromagnetic to information. In sex, it is the same. There is a physical contact, which will, like a laser device, you can induce a resonance in the system. You have a selectively attuned frequency resonance, as a result of which the physical contact will lead to a chemical response. And actually, the female has an initial chemical response, the male has an initial neuronal response. They balance out. But the female is the core of the species, so we follow that trail. So the physical activity leads to a chemical shift. The chemistry, which is the free flow of electrons in the body, is altered. There is a release of hormones, a shift of hormonal level, as a result of which the neuronal activation is different, because the hormones tune the sensitivity and receptivity of the neurons. And the other way around, as we see it in the males, where the neuronal activation then releases a chemical activation. So the male in that sense is faster, but is also slower, and vice versa for the female. Between them, they have the physical go to a chemical to an electromagnetical neural hormonal response, as a result of which orgasm can build up on that in the information response. At that, the sensation of the body is then able to transcend the body. So what people can know or find out by the experience of orgasm is what happens at the level of the hormonal neuronal activation when the body intelligence system, coming back to the mushrooms and their roots, is connected up to specific drugs. I say the spores in the system of the fertilization. So when the drugs come into the system, there is always a direct relationship to what goes on into the body, goes on in the body already. Drugs have an effect because they mimic or quasi mimic the effect of something that exists within the body already. The only difference is that in the body, those specific molecules would be released by emotional states, and actually that's what yoga training is about and what tantric training is about, that you know how to control emotional states, that you can go into the stage of rage without being enraged, that you can go into a state of fear without being afraid, that you go into a state of isolation and despair without being isolated and in despair. And in that way, all of the organs have their specific organ glands with their specific organ molecules with their specific emotional qualities, as is described in Chinese medicine and Indian medicine, the deities of those religious systems are the equivalent of the molecules that we have in the organ glands in our body. In the West, we call them the gods of the Olympus, or they call them the gods of the zodiac. But actually, they are the regulators for the change of relationship in our environment. That's precisely what the principle of God means. Generate, operate, destroy, G-O-D, God, is that you can generate, operate, or destroy the interface by which you connect to the environment. So you can shift the boundary of how you relate to the world that you live in. So every organ, gland, molecule does that in a specific manner. And all the old cultures realized that, so they gave it the names of the gods and described them by metaphors, so that people could understand that by the organ glands they could shift their relationship to the world as they perceive it. Fear is basically that you face the unknown and go back into a fight flight to a fear faint kind of perspective. So the fear part of that is associated with the kidneys in Oriental medicine, and the faint part of that is associated with the large intestine, letting go, hibernating, midwinter survival. the opposite of part is the fight flight, which is the animal response, which you find in the liver and in the spleen system. The spleen is the internal activation, and it also works with the pancreatic system on being able to digest what comes your way. And with the liver system, you're able to invoke the energy to actively act and interact with it in the outside world. So the fight, flight, fear and faint are actually parts of the organ system, and the molecules involved shift the perspective of how we relate into our environment. At other times I referred to the work of Hans Selye, who showed that the fever producing and the fever inhibiting molecular system is part of the regulation of the internal boundaries within the body. By the fever you are able to dissolve the borders, which means that the information can move more freely, and that the material is less of a hindrance on that. And fever is necessary to reorganize the information in the body. And the fever inhibitory molecules, and the mineralocorticoid steroids, are then affirming the existing state of matter in a quite literal sense. So these molecules, they shift these boundaries internally, between the organs, between the body and the environment, and also within the nervous system, the relationship, the shift between hormones and neurons. And so the yoga training knows that and goes into artificially, mentally, psychologically invoked states of fear without being afraid, for example. And by doing that, it activates those hormones, as a result of which the body can clean out that level of discrimination by which the kidneys would normally detoxify the body. So you can artificially use fear to detoxify the body, or you can artificially use apathy to bring the body into a stasis for hibernation. The slow breathing techniques with the yogis use, as a result of which they can survive in very low temperatures, and so on. All these yoga techniques are related to shifts of the balance between the hormones, and thus also the relationship in the functioning of the neurons. And that brings it back to the story of the interaction between drugs and mushrooms, or drugs and neurons, or drugs and hormones, because all of the drugs that people might take operate at that molecular level of cell communication. They mimic something which is already there, they activate something which is already there, and as a result they change the neuronal system, which vibrates the information in the body. So by changing the type of molecule, the information that you have in the body will process in a different manner. Just like when you're angry, you will use everything you know to make space for you in the world around you. When you're afraid, you'll use everything you know to withdraw from the environment that you're in. And in that way, all of these hormones reset the boundary, and that's the classical definition of boundary reset. You generate, operate, or destroy the boundary. That's the principle GOD, the God principle. And actually it is the I-God principle, because you need to integrate this relationship between generating, operating, and destroying. Otherwise you cannot hold on to it. You cannot use that mechanism in the future. So the I-God system is where we are able to reset our boundary, reset our self-definition, and maintain our integrity in a changing environment. With drugs, you interact with that, you interplay with that, and of course all of the food we eat and all of the experience we have do that already. You can think of something and be happy. You can look at the picture of something that makes you happy and be happy. You can eat something and be affirmed in one way or the other. And so we use food and images already in very many ways to calibrate how we relate to our environment. And of course, a religion is a technology to do that. And of course, in many religions, that technology has become crippled. They no longer show how it works. So if you want to see how it works, you need to go to a mystery school where they still show how you can use that. And it is always based on the relationship that by your thoughts you can change the physiology of the body, because at the level of the cell communication, the feed forward and the feedback between the cells, you actually see that physiology is psychology. So the psychosomatic link is right there. So at the moment that something will shift the molecular balance in the body, it will also affect the psychology, and the other way around. And that is where you then come into the difficulty of drugs, because at the moment that you take in a drug from outside, which does something which normally the molecular organization of the body would do on the inside, you upset the balance. You upset the GOD, the God principle. And that's where essentially you go from into the opposite. And of course the opposite of life is evil. L-I-V-E, E-V-I-L. So when you reverse the process in the body, the process of by which you live is the process which you will then experience as evil. So at the moment that the molecules come from outside instead of from inside, you reverse the process, you cross the boundary, and things turn into the opposite. Exactly what you do in mathematics. You have the equation sign, you take it from the left side of the equation time to the other side of the equation time, and it goes from minus to plus or from plus to minus. That is a fundamental principle which our body computes with as well. So at the moment that you take in molecules from outside, which normally would be there on the inside, you upset the balance and you distort something. And for example, people who take in nicotine have a molecule which the body already produces, because the neural system has the nicotine receptor which has to do with muscle cell activation. So at the moment that you need to affirm yourself in a specific way, the nicotine will be released in the body. It will trigger the nicotine receptor cells. The muscular system will change this postural stance of I'm here. But when you take it in from nicotine from outside, you in a way invoke that system of affirming something within your body, but you now have a system of enslavement that comes with it. Because when you do it inside in the body will know how much nicotine molecules it made, how much has been activated into the receptor system, because it knows by the feedback that your body physical stance has been affirmed in a specific way, or down-regulated in a specific way. For some people it works the other way around. But then from the nicotine that has been used in the nicotine receptors, once it is released, it goes back into the body as the breakdown products of the nicotine, and then is metabolized in the body because it knows that what it has put out now comes back as having been used. And as a result of which, the nicotine production side in the body knows that has now the breakdown product comes down, so there is enough, I can shut it down. And this works for every drug. This works every molecular production in the body. It is part of that feed-forward feedback cycle. But when the nicotine comes from outside, suddenly there is this flood of nicotine which the body cannot account for because it didn't create it, there was no reason for it. Suddenly it is activated in the body, the stance shows it, the neural muscular feedback shows it, the body knows that there is this change, but still cannot account for the origin of the nicotine. And then there is this flood of nicotine breakdown products, which for the body means you don't have to produce this anymore. But that means that the body production is switched off. The overdose of external nicotine breakdown product switches off, and switches off longer than accounted for. And that's where the withdrawal effect of the nicotine comes from. And in the same way, for every other drug, where the withdrawal system comes from. It is not that you take the drug and it activates something, but it is because you take the drug and the breakdown product inactivates something. And what it inactivates is the production site of where the drugs normally would be produced for the body in reaction to the neural changes in the body. Because it's a neural system that conditions and activates the hormonal system, and it's the hormonal system that conditions and calibrates the neuronal system. It's a yin-yang thing of the coupled connection between the two cells which originally were one. So then basically we have the understanding that of course drugs will work because they mimic something that happens in the body. Of course drugs will backfire because at the same time they cripple and incapacitate the feed-forward feedback balance in the body. So when you took it from outside crossing the boundary, you basically interrupted a feed-forward feedback loop within the body. It is the system of balance. You cross one boundary, so you lose a boundary or you block a boundary at another level. These things are very precisely computed. Because the body as a whole is a system of information computation, and you can see how precisely that is calibrated by the work of Michael Persig, who showed that at the moment that you de-block old memories in the system, which work like an electric loop, like a little tornado going around in a circle, that there is an electric current storing a specific memory in the body because you could not process it, you could not digest it, and it's sort of locked in somewhere in the body in a little magnetic loop like they use in CERN for holding electronic particles in place. Your body likewise creates this little electrical niche, but that requires energy, and at that area of the body where that nasty memory is kept can no longer be used. So the more of these lock-in nasty memories you have, the more holes that are in the cheese, the less the brain and the body can function, and the more the aging process kicks in, and at some point the system will break down because there's not enough pathways for the information to still be processed. Michael Persig and others realized that at the moment that you address these locked-in memories, you can discharge the charge around it, which means that this freezer lock-in field which was around them can be released. That energy becomes available. The experience itself can be repositioned, it can be digested, it can be interpreted in a different way, because you're no longer in a threatening context. You can actually turn it around into something else, learn from it, as a result of which the energy which was clamped up there becomes available and productive somewhere else. So that's where the aging process is turned around in a rejuvenation process. And Michael Persig became famous for the gold helmet, because you can actually use an electromagnetic feedback system by which you can discharge these pent up locked in charges in the memory system, as a result of which this information becomes available again and the whole nervous system start to function as an integral system. And what happens within you and what happens around you is connected, which is what the whole purpose of mystic training and yoga and so on is about, that you go into the God awareness. Your internal being and your external being are one. And so what Michael Persig measured in the electrophysiology was what Carl Primram described for the neuronal psychology. He was a neurologist, psychologist, psychiatrist, and neurophysiologist. He really wanted to look at all aspects of what happens in our thinking. And so after having put it all together, he said that our body, our brain, our everything processes as a hologram, and in that hologram everything connects, and part of that hologram is the balance between the neuronal and the hormonal. And so once you understand that, and then you can understand that yes, drugs will trigger that, And yes, they can make this change in the way your nervous system will process the information that you have already stored within your body. So you will experience everything you know already in a different manner, which can be more focused or more generalized, depending on how you use the God principle to zoom in or to zoom out. But it is still the information that you have, with just a different perspective, as a result of a shift in the molecular balance because of the introduction of some molecules into the body system. But if you know which part of the body system that is, and which of the organ glands normally produces that, then why not find something from your memory banks which will release that same thing, because at some point in the past you had an experience as a result of which those hormones were released. So then, and that's the practice of shamanic training, if you know that you can scared from going to a place, then you also know that you can be scared from remembering that place. But the more you're remembering, the more that you can feel that what is triggered at that time is a molecule which also has many different meanings and can do many different things also, once you open the scope of perspective of that. So yes, drugs can trigger that, but they do it from outside, so you're crossing a boundary in doing that. You can also do it from inside, but then you need to see that there is a relationship between neurons and hormones, or that there is the relationship between the psychology and the physiology. Specifically, that's the relationship between the intelligence and memory. And that, of course, is the core of the whole exercise of religion and mysticism, shamanic training, and the emergence of consciousness. And in essence, that's the whole purpose of what the mystic training calls the waking up in life. That you know that what you experience is your creation, because in your body, that's the way it works. So this story is not just about mushrooms and drugs, and all of the different kind of drugs, be it cannabis, the mushrooms, the truffles, the LSD, the ayahuasca. They are just specific instances of molecules which you can find in nature, which you can also find in the body. And guess how that could be? We have been living as organisms in very much earlier forms in nature. So we have been living with those plants, we have been living off those plants, we have been developing by those plants. The monocellular organism became multicellular organisms, they became parasites, they became symbionts, they became organisms by their own standing. They were still living off the foods, and so you can still see that this hormesis effect, that what the plants have in them can be used within our body still, is still active. And in that sense, we have never become disconnected from nature around us, but we will have specific plants and plant forms by which this hormesis effect is very much stronger. So for example, if you look at the cannabinoid receptors in our body, they are around the mouth, around the lungs, around the throat, around the liver, which means that somehow, at some time, it probably was ingested as part of the food that we ate. And being rich in omega-3 essential acids, fatty acids, then it makes sense that that would be part of a diet. But it's not just those plants, there are many other plants which we have an affinity and association with, because as we look at the development of our body throughout the eonic development of the forms of life, by the interaction of life forms, a specific cellular system was able to incorporate the food and the information of the food and the information processing in that organism that they had by the molecules that they use. So we build that into our system, and we're still able to use that. But more importantly, and that's also what we see in the transition from plant life to animal life, plant life lives in the environment where it is rooted, earth and water underneath, air and light overhead. So the terrain and the climate are there connected by the plant, which is like a zipper between them, and also the translation bureau between them. And this plant then can drop a seed and continue to live elsewhere. So in that sense, the seed is the suitcase in which the whole plant is packaged. So the acorn is the suitcase form of the oak. It can travel, can plant itself somewhere else. And then the cycle of the season continues around that oak in its new setting. And the difference between the plant and the animal is that the animal has the seasonal cycle built in what we call the organ system. So evidently we in the organ system will have the connection to the specific environments that we were standing before. And so in that way there will still be this connection between the food that we eat and the experience that we have in our body. So that then is the essence of this principle of the psychosomatic principle, or the psychotropic principle, as you would also call it. Psychosomatic is that from your thoughts that you can affect the body. Psychotropic is that specific molecule will have an effect on the psyche. So that means that food can affect your psyche, and evidently that is the case, because at the core in the body it is all based on the feed forward and feedback loop between the cells in our body. I interact with that, and you interact with the whole togetherness in the body, where the physiology is the psychology, which also forms the sociology and the ecology. So yes, you can look at the drugs, but why not instead look at what happens in the body, and how in the body the shift between the drugs, more specifically the molecules, the hormones, and the sensation, more specifically the neurons and the neural activity, takes place. So the more you zoom in on that, the more techniques you can find to do that, and in fact you will have rediscovered mystical training. So let me conclude the story with that.